You're Locked On NHL, your daily podcast on the National Hockey League. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is the Locked On NHL podcast, your Tuesday edition of the show. Joe DiBiase from Locked On Sabres here in Buffalo. Mike DiStefano from Locked On Leafs here in Buffalo, by the way, home of the Toronto Blue Jays. Played the Yankees tonight. Mike, I don't know if you saw my tweet on this, or our station tweet on this. We are, what was the debate? Is Vlad Guerrero Jr. having one of the best seasons in Buffalo sports history? But would you qualify this as Buffalo sports history, like a Buffalo season with what's going on with the Jays right now?
I'll allow it. Yeah, okay. I'll allow it for sure. I mean, he's doing half of his work. Well, I guess not quite. They just got there, but I mean, he's doing a good portion of his work down in Buffalo. I mean, until they come up to Toronto, like it's partially Buffalo's team. So yeah, I think that definitely would qualify. Where'd you stand on that? Do you think, like, is there a Sabre, like, did Dom Hasek put together an unworldly season that maybe would be classified as one of the best, like back maybe the Jim Kelly era? Josh Allen had a pretty solid season this year for the Bills. Yep. I mean, it's got to be up there, but did you have like an argument for another season, another player?
I think it's a strong, case, especially if he wins the triple crown.
That's open shut case. Like the triple crown. Like, I think the triple crown is probably, it's the hardest like single sports title to win, like individual sports title. It's only happened like a handful of times. Whereas someone wins a Vezina, someone wins an MVP every single year. But a triple crown to lead in home runs, batting average, and RBIs is absolutely incredible. And he's on his way to doing that. Currently leading the entire Major League Baseball in home runs, or at least the AL. I think all of MLB, though, in home runs, RBI. And he's got an amazing batting average to go with a top-tier OPS. It's absolutely incredible what he's doing.
I think the other seasons we talked about, Hasek's kind of tough to... Maybe this almost hurts him, that he's got... We had six Vezinas, two Hart trophies, and it's almost hard to pick one season for him, you know?
Right.
Because from 93 to 99, I mean, every year he's first in the league in save percentage, and like it's hard to differentiate because he's just nuts good in all six of those seasons. And then Kelly in 91, but I think it's tough to put Kelly in 91 for even the best Bills season, because Thurman Thomas actually won the MVP trophy that season.
Right.
And OJ rushing for who?
Well, yeah, there's OJ also, which
OJ 2000 yards in 14 games.
Yeah. We just passed on that conversation, but
right. We kind of didn't want to pick that.
Who was I thinking? Bruce Smith. I mean, Bruce Smith had himself quite the career in Buffalo.
Yeah, he almost is kind of like Hasek for that, where like it's tough to differentiate one season from the other because there's just a million good ones. 19 sacks in 90, I think, was his number one that we considered. But yeah, maybe that helps Guerrero too. The fact that he's just kind of passing through and doing something that rare that he'll get there. Notice, by the way, that, well, I guess we did mention Hasek. I didn't say we didn't have a lot of Sabre nominees there. They'll come up kind of indirectly on one topic we get to a little bit later on in the podcast when we talk about some coaching headlines that are happening from around the league. We've also got Dougie Hamilton to talk to, the Hurricanes giving him permission to talk with other teams for a sign and trade. And we've got the two series that are going on right now. In fact, the Islanders Lightning game is ongoing at this moment, but 5 minutes left in the period, Tampa's winning 4-1. So I think it's safe to assume, for the purposes of this podcast, that we're just going to call it 1-1 in that series, which good result, I would say, for the Islanders after two games in Tampa. I would have absolutely taken 1-1 if I were them.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Tampa clearly the favorite going into it, but as per usual, the underdog Islanders are taking no crap from no one. I mean, they've just keep coming out and they just keep playing, keep their head down. They've got blinders on and just keep performing. And, you know, they put on an absolute clinic in game one. Like, they didn't give Tampa anything in game one. Game two, I mean, they're doing a good job too here throughout this one. I haven't watched the entire game, but what I've been able to watch, I've had my eyes on about 60%, 70% of the game. And I would say that the Islanders have done a good job, but again, got to stay out of the box, A, and B, you know, it's just Tampa, is so opportunistic. And oh, it's 4-2. Barzell. Tampa is so opportunistic. When they do get those slight opportunities in good scoring areas, they don't miss. They do not miss. And they came out firing in game two. And you knew that was going to happen, though. Like, after kind of laying an egg in game one, that's they didn't quite play their game. They came out firing here in game two and seemingly looks like they're going to earn this victory and take this thing all tied up, which is what, going back to New York? So that would have been tough. If you would have had to go back to New York down 0-2 if they would have lost tonight, that would have been tough, because that New York crowd, man, we saw what they're able to do when Boston came to town, and what they were able to will this team into being is kind of scary. So Tampa luckily came out for game two for them, and it looks like they're going to take a 1-1 series onto the island.
Yeah, I think the Islanders have been very impressive to me throughout these playoffs, not just because now in this game or this series so far, it seems like they've played a little bit more back to their defensive style through the two games. But I thought there were a lot of moments in that Boston series where they just opened up the floodgates and they said, all right, you want to skate with us? Let's skate. And they were able to match the Bruins in that area. So Tampa, I think you'll probably get a different result if they try that over the course of an entire series. But again, they're not really trying to do that so far.
Well, Tampa just has that depth. Like, they come at you with wave on wave on wave. Where Boston, I mean, they did add some depth when they added, you know, Taylor Hall, but I felt like he wasn't as much of a factor in the second round series as he was in the first round series. But with Tampa, it's just like they roll all four lines, and you've got 12 guys who really can't put the puck in the back of the net, and they've got a good blend of size, skill, speed. Like, they're just such a well-built team, and it seems like the Islanders need to play perfectly. You need perfection to beat this Tampa squad. Because as our man Dougie states, they are playing $18 million over the cap.
Right. Oh, my God. We'll get to him later, too. I loved that comment when it happened. Because it is kind of... I wonder if we're going to get any amendments to salary cap rules because of that. Because it's not even like they just kind of took advantage of it, like going over a couple million dollars. Like, they went $18 million over the cap. That's nuts.
That's a summer. Again, we'll put that in the back pocket. We'll bring that up in the summer.
Yeah, that's right. And then how about in the other series, Montreal and Vegas? Vegas was an insane favorite, like -500 going into that series, at least at our partners over at betonline.ag. And they take game one. I think we're well on our way to a dominant Vegas Golden Knights series win over Montreal. How about Carey Price, though, in that game? I mean, he, to me, was the only thing that was keeping that close. But again, I think that's their formula, especially when you get to this point. When you're playing teams as good as Vegas, I think we knew Montreal, the only way that they're going to have a shot is they need Carey Price to be the best goaltender in the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's so tough, too, because on the other side, they got Marc-Andre Fleury, who's playing every bit as good, if not even better than Carey Price. The problem is, you know, Fleury's getting the all-world defense in front of him and, you know, guys who are putting the puck in the net, something that Montreal has struggled to do quite a bit. And honestly, it's getting to the point with the Habs where if they don't score first, they don't know how to win games. Like, they're legitimately, what are they, 0-and they haven't won a single game, I don't think, in these entire playoffs where they haven't scored first, yet they're undefeated when they score first. So, like, it's maddening. It's wild because they swept, so they won, what, 7 in a row and didn't give up a single goal first and were able to win, roll the table on Toronto. You know, they won game 5, 6, and 7 and then won all four games against Winnipeg.
Yep.
And game one, unable to score the first goal. Vegas gets it, and then they kind of ran away with it from there. So that first goal is going to be really important this entire series.
Yeah. By the way, the shot totals in game one weren't that drastically bad for Montreal. It was only, I think, 30 to 28. But I think if you watch, I thought Vegas controlled the game in terms of possession. Shot attempts, they were well above Montreal. So the Canadians did a good job getting in the shot lanes and kind of playing the way they have to play. But I think Vegas,
right? Like, that's what they do. Like,
right, exactly. That's what they got to do.
Right? They keep everything kind of to the outside. They're going to clog up the middle of the ice and not allow you to get places. Mm-hmm. they'll suffocate you pretty quickly. But if you can get the transition game going and score off the rush, that's kind of that. That's like the Achilles heel of this team. And that's what Toronto wasn't able to do. That's what Winnipeg wasn't able to do. But it looks like Vegas was able to do that a little bit yesterday and kind of get this break down Montreal's game plan, break down their defense a little bit. And it ended up resulting in some production and some goals, and they ended up winning the game 4-1. My question for you, though, and you know, you've been, I guess, maybe you've watched a little bit. Well, maybe not, because the Sabres weren't playing in the same division as them. But man, I always forget about how good Shea Theodore is until the playoffs.
Yeah,
are you in the same boat as me?
I think I am, because he's always kind of in the back of my mind, because I even remember him being like a star level defense prospect coming up in Anaheim system. And then I remember the reaction when they kind of let him go to Vegas. It was like, really? He might be the most valuable defenseman, one of them, in your organization. And like, all right, let's see how that works. And he's become a top pair defenseman for Vegas. But I think you're right. Like, maybe it's because he doesn't put up gaudy stats. He puts up good stats. I mean, he's put up 40 plus points in two straight years. But he's not putting up like Norris Trophy level stats to get, I think, the star level recognition that maybe he deserves. Because again, I think his defensive impact combined with being an above average, even a very good offensive defenseman, I think you make a good point that like maybe his stardom doesn't arrive for people until you really get to see him game in and game out and see the impact. Because has he ever been a Norris even conversation? I don't think so, right?
Well, not yet.
Maybe like, he will, right?
But he's still super young. Like, I think that he deserves to be in the conversation as that up and coming blue liners. You know, we always talk about Cale Makar for good reason. You know, Adam Fox had himself a heck of a season. Now he's up in that conversation. You got guys like Quinn Hughes, Miro Heiskanen. I think Shea Theodore belongs in that conversation now as one of those young up and coming defensemen who's going to be a force to be reckoned with for the next 10 years in the NHL.
Yeah. By the way, last thing on the two semifinal matchups going on right now, the Islanders and the Canadiens own the third and the fourth longest Stanley Cup final droughts in NHL history. Not even just active, although the top five are all active streaks. So the Islanders have not made the finals in 35 seasons since 1984. Montreal has not made it in 26 seasons since 1993, especially you being who you are. I think you might be able to guess. You can at least guess one of the two that outranks the Islanders and the Canadiens' droughts.
Yeah, well, the Maple Leafs have not made the cup final since
they won it
back in 67. So yeah, it's been a long time.
So they have their number one all time at 53 seasons, which they've made the conference finals five times since. I don't know if that's more impressive or not than the team who's second at 41 seasons. Do you think you can guess who that is if I only gave you a minute here? 41 seasons. It's the only other streak all time other than the Leafs of not making the finals that outranks the Islanders and the Canadiens, who are one series win away from breaking theirs.
I'm going to absolute dart throw. This is a current team in the NHL. And have they been relocated? Like, is this a relocated team?
You're on the right path.
Am I? Minnesota?
No, not Minnesota.
No,
you're on the right path with relocation. They have, this team did relocate. So it's it's two teams in one franchise.
Two teams in one franchise, like the Winnipeg Jets, like the Arizona Coyotes,
Coyotes? You got the right Winnipeg Jets slash team here. Even though what I'm looking at now, seventh all time in this Stanley Cup Finals drought is Jets and the Thrashers at 21 seasons. The Coyotes are listed here at 41 seasons. They've only made the conference finals once, by the way. And they've never made it in their franchise's history, which means the Jets have never done it in two separate franchises. So 62 seasons combined, if you want to put all three of those awful teams together.
There's a reason why they relocate. No,
That's maybe that's it. The Panthers, by the way, too, they're right after Montreal, 24 seasons. They have not even won a playoff series since they last won in the Stanley Cup final in 96. So just a little stat, little to throw your way. I'm watching a brawl right now, by the way, ended this game between the Islanders and the Lightning. I'm not sure anything's going to become of this so far. Looks like just some normal give and go. I got Travis Zajac and Anthony Cirelli that are getting a little heated, but
just means that game three is going to be fun. Going to be fun, Joe. Game
love a good three. You gotta love a good end of game scrum.
Oh yeah, it just gets you pumped up. I mean, and you just know, all right, game three, they're going to get right to it. You know, there's going to be a fight in the first period. Oh, that's what I want to talk to you about in this game, and I'm glad actually that we decided to kind of do the podcast a little later, because there was a controversial moment in this game that I think we should discuss really quickly before we move on and get to some of these other topics. So I know that you were working, but did you happen to see the Brayden Point play where he got pushed into the goaltender by Adam Pellick?
No, I did not. I'm going to watch it real quick right now.
Okay. As I will film for you while you take a look at it.
I've got it. I've watched it.
Okay. So for those who didn't, like, essentially Brayden Point in on a breakaway, trying to corral the puck. Adam Pellick gives him a good old two-hand cross check, pushes him and right into Varlamov, and a penalty ensued. And that was when the, it became 1-1, the Islanders scoring on that power play and tied the game at one. So luckily it didn't really matter at the end of the game, because Tampa buckled down and won it, you know, scored three in a row to end the game. But how do you make that call? How do you, and apparently it was the trailing ref too that made that call, but that is so clearly like being pushed into the goalie. That is a goalie interference. How is he going to stop?
Man, I can't. There's no argument on earth that Point should have been penalized there.
Officiating again at its worst here in the NHL. It's just the storylines that come out of officiating the NHL are incredible. Like I don't get it.
I'm watching it back, and it's such a reactionary call by the official. I'm just watching the official, and he doesn't put his arm up ever. Like I think this is just the end result of he sees the goalie on the ice, he saw Point, and he sees Point on the ice, and either he was zoned out or he was watching something else. I can't really tell, but again, I don't know how you could be watching that play up close from his vantage point if that's where your eyes are directed and call that penalty on Brayden Point. There's no case to be made that it should be Point. He's cross-checked into it. I always hate, by the way, when players jump other players or opposing members of their team when they've been pushed into their goaltender. Now, I will say in this case, though, I think if I'm watching it, I'm really hyper-analyzing this here, 44 is, forgive me, who's 44 on the...
Pellick.
Pellick is... because Mayfield is the one. Mayfield
comes in afterwards and says,
Mayfield
in the business.
That's right. I think if you watch it back, though, he doesn't really see what happened. He just sees his goalie and the player land. I'll let him get away with it. But that's a pet peeve of mine, when your own teammate shoves a guy into a goalie and then you still decide to go jump that guy who got pushed in. That's always a pet peeve of mine.
Just be a bleep disturber, right? Like it's super annoying. Super annoying. But yeah, I definitely want to bring that up, because I thought that just another example of the inconsistent officiating that we've seen so far through these playoffs. And luckily, again, at the end of the day, it didn't really matter. Tampa ended up, you know, buckling down and winning the game. But imagine if that was like a pivotal turning point in this game, where it was kind of all Tampa at that point, and then the Islanders get the power play, tie it up, and what if that became their, you know, the tilt, the ice starts to tilt there, and the Islanders go on to win, and that was the turning point. Man, like, that would have been a massive, massive storyline for tomorrow. Luckily, they didn't end up getting they ended up winning, so it's not as big of a deal, but still worth talking about, just basically to poo-poo on the NHL officials who've done a not-so-great job for a lot of this year.
I always love doing that. All right, let's jump into a couple of other topics. We've got some more off-season-y topics going on right now. Let's start in the coaching front. Gerard Gallant to the New York Rangers. I think this one makes sense. I thought the Rangers would go for a more proven, not respectable, what's the word I want here? A guy with a track record like Gallant to come in and be their head coach. So I wasn't surprised here, especially when, I mean, the Rangers, it seemed like going out the door last season, of course, with all the Tom Wilson stuff, it was like whoever it was going to be. Was it James Dolan that was creating this initiative that like they're going to be tougher to play against? And I think Gerard Gallant, even though he's a very adaptable coach, and I think he showed that with both Florida and Vegas, that he can coach skilled teams. I still think of him as like his teams don't get pushed around, you know?
No. Oh, no. No, they don't. And it's a blend, right? Like you think about Gallant, I think a reason why he was fired was because he wasn't analytics driven enough for the Panthers at the time, right? That was kind of when they were doing their weird push for analytics, and it was just weird things were going on in Florida at that point. And then, you know, I still don't understand why he was fired in Vegas. Like, I thought he was doing a pretty good job. It was like 2 years earlier, he brought an expansion team to the Stanley Cup final, and then you fire him a couple of years later. It's not like he wasn't, like, the team was still doing okay. I don't know what they were thinking, but, I mean, clearly it's working. They're, you know, back to another conference final or a semifinal here, you know, but regardless, I think Gallant is a great coach. You know, I got to watch him personally pretty up close here at the World Championships, helped get Canada to a gold medal. And I think that he's a really, really good coach. So this is a fantastic hire for the Rangers. I think that he's going to be able to get this team to where they need to be. Because as you know, and the listeners of this podcast know, I was very high on New York going into the year. And coaching was kind of a big issue, I think, as to why they weren't doing as well as they should have. And I think, you know, there's a coaching. If there's anything that I'm learning here in the Stanley Cup playoffs, is that coaching actually matters in hockey, especially when I watch the New York Islanders do their thing. And I think that Gallant is a really, really solid coach, and the Rangers got themselves a good one. And I expect for them to be a pretty solid team in the future.
Certainly a team that even as soon as next season, I mean, yeah, they'll be a popular pick again to make a big leap forward. It's probably coming. I mean, maybe some, like, we were a year too early on it. Maybe next year we'll be a year too early on it. But at some point, with all that talent, especially being that young, they're going to take a step forward. They're going to take a leap forward. I think Gallant is a guy that can definitely make that happen.
A word for Bet Online, the fastest, easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but you got the NBA, college hoops, the NHL, all in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. For the Saber games, you could bet on the exact amount of which either the Sabres or their opponent will win by. So if you think the Sabres are going to win by exactly two, you can find odds for the Sabres winning by exactly two. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. The best way to place your bets, and it is free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline.ag is the site. BetOnline, your online sportsbooks experts. Remember to use the promo code Locked On. RockAuto.com, a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They got everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate, quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle, and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck, write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com.
The other weird coaching headline over the past couple of days, the Sabres, who are just interviewing literally anybody that will talk to them. I don't think they'll hire anybody that will talk to them. I think it's probably going to be Don Granato. But I think Kevin Adams is just interviewing as many people as possible, and one of those guys was going to be Jack Capuano, the associate coach of the Ottawa Senators, most known as the longtime Islanders coach, 2010 to 2017. So yeah, I can say long time, right? 7 years. He was denied the opportunity to interview by the Senators. And when I first saw that, I'm like, okay, that's strange. I wonder if there's something more to that, because it would just be weird if they blocked him from interviewing for a promotion on another team. In other sports, like I know in the NFL, you can't block assistants from interviewing for other head coach jobs. If it's considered a promotion, then you can't go out of your way to stop it from happening. If an offensive coordinator in the NFL has an NFL head coach interview somewhere, he's allowed to go interview. But here, that's not a rule. And Ottawa says, nope, you're not interviewing for the Sabre job. And it's not like Jack Capuano is a guy that he might never get a head coach job again in the NHL. It's not like he's a hot candidate year after year. So he might just be sitting back at wherever he is. His home in Michigan, I think, is where he's from. Like, he might just be sitting back by the lake being like, I wonder if I'm ever going to get an NHL job again or a head coach job again. And then the Sabres come calling, which might be like the one team you'd think, okay, maybe I could sneak my way into that job. And then your boss says, no, you can't even talk to them. And I guess, though, Mike, I shouldn't be too surprised, because it is a team that's owned by Eugene Melnyk. Right.
Yeah, yeah. No, that is very true. There are very unorthodox things happen in Senators land. Look, I was just as surprised as you were when I read that report. I don't like it. I don't think many people in hockey like it very much. Like, it's not like he's some like young prodigy, up and coming stud coach, right? Like, kind of like Kyle Dubas when he went to go and I believe it was Colorado back when Dubas was an AGM for Toronto. They wanted to interview him for their GM job, and Toronto denied it. They said, no, we're not going to allow you to do so. But that was because there was always a plan in place. Like, this is our guy of the future. He's just not ready yet. That's not the case with Capuano. Like, he's not a guy you're grooming to one day be your head coach.
Right.
This is a guy who's you know, I don't want to say at the end of the road as a coach, because, you know, who knows how long he wants to coach for. But, like, he's had a long career. He's not a young pup anymore. And who knows how many opportunities he's going to have to be a head coach in the NHL. And if that's something he wants to do, why are the Ottawa Senators of all teams saying no? Like, it just doesn't.
Right.
Not even that I agree with it, but let's say this was Tampa Bay and they felt that they were a year away from winning the cup and that he was like an integral part of their penalty kill or their power play. And like, he was a really good locker room guy and they just didn't want to lose him because he was such a great assistant to John Cooper, let's say. Maybe you would have an argument, like, maybe. I'm not even still sold on that. I still think that for a better opportunity, they should be able to go. But this Capuano with the Senators makes no sense.
And the Senators too, like, even if, like, just look at it, like, the likelihood that he's getting that job, as someone that's very plugged in to the Sabres coach search right now, even if they would have interviewed Capuano, there's no way he was getting that job. It's just not gonna, like, someone, it would be very hard for me to see them getting off Granato as their man. But if they were going to do it, I think they would do it for a guy with a more proven track record than Capuano. If Gallant had said, I'll go to Buffalo, if Boudreau becomes a more likely outcome, like a guy that has at least more of a winning history than Capuano. And if the Senators looked at that and said, okay, one, how likely is he to get that job anyway? Because they're interviewing a million people and he's not the number one candidate by any means. So one, we're probably not going to lose him anyway. And two, if we do deny him, what kind of working relationship do you think you're then going to have with him? Because now he's going to harbor hard feelings, or he could. And that's what it sounds like, by the way, because I'm reading now from Elliot Friedman's 31 Thoughts, who says that Capuano, after a successful world championships run, Ottawa denied the request. There are hard feelings about it, and it could get messy between Capuano and the Senators. He does not back down from a challenge. And like, right, like, what did the Senators think was going to happen? Did they think that they were just going to tell him no, and he was just going to come back with his tail between his legs? Like, okay, sure, I'll just be the associate head coach from now on. Like, no, like, that's a terrible job as an employer, and your employee is going to be upset about that. And that's an awful way to conduct business. So I think it's awful by the Senators. But again, if there's an organization or an owner in the NHL right now that would do something like this, I think it's him. I don't know why I got so heated up by that, by the way. It's Jack Capuano and the Ottawa Senators, a coach in a team that I like almost never care about.
Well, but, it's your Sabres, right? You're involved because it's your Sabres, right? I mean,
I guess, but I don't want him to be their coach. That's the other part of it. Like, I want no part of him being their coach. So,
yeah, I guess so. Maybe they did you a favor. They were like, man, listen,
right.
we don't want like the Pagulas to get the wrong idea of Capuano, get sucked into his boyish charm, and then have Joe DiBiase in Tonawanda be like super upset. So we're just going to, on behalf of Joe from WGRZ, just not allow him to go and interview for this. That's probably what was going through his head. We're just thinking too small. That's it. That's it, Joe.
Right, definitely. All right, and then lastly on the podcast today, the Hurricanes have given Dougie Hamilton the opportunity to talk to other teams. He gets the chance, by the way, to talk to other teams. And there could be a potential now for a sign and trade, as he is going to be a free agent on, I think, July 23rd, the free agency date, or is that free agency? I always get those dates confused because expansion draft, the draft, and the free agency period all start like within a week of each other, but whatever. Yeah, end of July.
And I think it's the 28th. Oh, I want to say 28th. I think the expansion's the 18th. The draft is usually a few days after that. So
I think the draft is the 23rd.
Yeah. And then like on the 28th or something like that would be free agency. Yeah.
Right. So what do you see happening here? It's going to be his fourth team. I've always been perplexed, by the way, why Hamilton doesn't get more credit and fanfare than he does. And maybe I just don't know enough about his situation, because his analytical numbers are always great. His possession numbers are always great. His Corsi and expected goals for are always great. So he's got that crowd working for him. Mm-hmm. He's got the surface stats, you know, the stats that are easy to read for most fans. Like the point totals are always high. The goal totals are high. And he's big. He's 6'6", 229. But again, maybe I don't watch him enough to know about, like, is he soft? And does that rub people the wrong way? Because to me, he just seems to kind of have everything to his game. And it's odd to me that he's already going to be on his fourth team.
It is. And this was brought up when he was traded to Calgary. And then when he was traded out of Calgary to Carolina, there was like a weird report about how, like, when the team would do team dinners or they would go out to the bar or something like that on like an off day, Dougie Hamilton would like if they're in like New York City or something like that, like he would go to the museum instead and like just go to like and do other things. Okay. Right. So I don't know if that really means anything, if that actually played into a factor of anything, but that was kind of like a big story a few years back when, you know, the Flames traded him to Carolina. But make no mistake about it, on the ice, Dougie Hamilton is an absolute beast. Like, he is a number one defenseman, and there's going to be a lot of interest in Dougie Hamilton. He's going to be expensive. There's going to be a lot of teams calling. And I mean, the Carolina Hurricanes have kind of been known as like a team that's not willing to pay out that much money, especially on the defensive end of things. So I'll be curious to see how that ends up going, but giving him permission to seek possible trade partners in a sign and trade sounds like they already know that they're not going to be able to compete with the offers that Hamilton is likely to get in free agency. So they would rather try and finagle some sort of sign and trade, figure out what team he wants to go to by giving him permission to talk to these teams and figure out a contract, and then get an asset for moving on from him as opposed to just losing him for nothing. But the benefit of doing this for any other team is that you get that extra eighth year. So you can sign Hamilton to that extra eighth year, whether, you know, you want that because you think he'll give you eight solid years, which unlikely at his age, but it'll allow you to kind of bring that AAV down. And in a cap flat era right now with no cap, with the cap being flat, I think that's going to be really intriguing to some teams, because we still don't know how long this cap is going to stay at 81.5. Could be another couple of years, right? And if you can extend him and get an extra eighth year out of it and bring it down $1 million or $1.5 million on that AAV, like that's really attractive to some teams. So I think that's where the benefit comes from if you're an outsider. Because I've heard some people say, well, he's going to be a free agent. Why would you give up a massive asset to go and trade for Dougie Hamilton? We could just sign him in the offseason. And that's why that extra eighth year with the possibility to lower that AAV, that cap hit, is why you would do that.
Yeah. He, by the way, I tried to look up this stat like real quick, and finally having a hard time doing it, but he has scored double digit goals in 7 seasons in a row, and that includes 2 shortened years, this year and last year.
Well, last year broke his leg.
But he broke his leg.
He was number one scoring defenseman before he broke his leg.
He had 14 goals in 47 games. So again, like double-digit goals in 7 consecutive years. I think that's got to be pretty darn rare for a defenseman. And not only maybe like recent memory, but history.
So, Dougie Hamilton is one of the best defensemen in the NHL. He's just flat out is. Like, he's absolutely unreal. And look, I followed him for a long time because he played for the Niagara Ice Dogs, my local junior team. And I remember, you know, when he led them all the way to, to within junior, long, deep playoff runs, and going and watching him as a 18, 19-year-old just being an absolute stud. And also the fact that he technically, the Maple Leafs, was a Maple Leafs draft pick because they trade away 2 picks to go and get Phil Kessel. One of those picks was Dougie Hamilton. So there's always been a link with the Leafs and Dougie Hamilton, and people have always kind of kept an eye on him because if there's one thing that Toronto has lacked literally forever is a smooth skating, hard-hitting, big, athletic, offensive, right-shot defenseman who can quarterback your power play. And that's exactly what Dougie Hamilton is. And listen, Joe, we're not going to sit here and talk about this all podcast, but as a Locked On Leafs host, I can tell you that there'll be a couple of mentions about Dougie Hamilton and his prospects to becoming a Maple Leaf and how much I think that he would help them and how much they would want him this summer if that were to be a possibility.
Yeah, I've seen Toronto mentioned. I've seen Philadelphia mentioned as a team that's going to be aggressive towards trying to get him. Vegas is always in play for things like that, and they might be able to carve out some cap space.
How? Now, none.
They do, what did I see? I saw Friedman writing about them. I don't have it offhand. I'll try to pull it up. But the other thing I saw was that the possibility of Seattle getting him and getting at least his negotiating rights. They have Ron Francis running the show, who was general manager of the Hurricanes, I think, when they traded for him.
Yeah.
There was a connection being made there. They don't have a lot of assets, but I don't think you need a ton of assets. I mean, you might be able to get his negotiating rights for what, a third round pick, or is that ridiculous? Is that too little?
I don't know. I'm probably around there. I mean, I don't know if anyone would trade for his negotiation rights. I think the sign and trade. Would be what you want to do. So you got to make sure that contract is signed before whatever July 28th, whatever the day is, like usually like July 1, right, is like that day where you got to sign your free agents. But so make sure that is signed, and then you make that trade afterward. I mean, what's going to be interesting is a signing bonus, because I don't think Carolina likes to pay out signing bonuses, but he's going to want one. And depending on which team he goes to, you know, that signing bonus usually happens on day one of the contract. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of going to be interesting to see how that goes. I guess, it'll kick in the first day of the league year, which is usually July 1, again, like as we put that in quotation marks. So I guess as long as you make that trade beforehand, you'll probably end up having to pay the bonus on that day, as long as you get your roster first. So maybe that won't be an issue. Scratch that.
The Vegas idea, by the way, was Fleury being moved, because he just had a Vezina caliber season. He's got 1 year left on his deal at $7 million. He's 36 years old. Remember last year in the offseason, there were reports that they would eat half of his salary just to get a team to take him. So maybe Vegas is thinking, all right, this is the time to cash in. Like, we love you, Fleury, but we've got Leonard under contract for 4 more years. We should be good with him as our number one. And we would rather take that $7 million and go give it to Dougie Hamilton, who we're going to have for multiple years, as opposed to Fleury, who's going to split time for one more, and then that's probably it. So that was the idea, that they would basically be subbing Fleury out for Hamilton.
But yeah, that's an interesting idea, actually. Interesting.
Maybe Carolina would trade a 1-for-1.
Yeah, like Fleury for Hamilton.
Fleury for Hamilton?
Yeah, Fleury for Hamilton, I guess. Yeah, if you're doing the sign and trade.
Would Carolina want that? Mrazek's a free agent, I think.
Yeah, he's a free agent. Well, they got Nedeljkovic, who played exceptional this year, but I still think that would be a worthwhile conversation to have between Carolina and Vegas.
They have $30 million in cap space. I don't know why they don't sign Hamilton. It's $30 million in cap space next year.
They don't pay people.
I know. They're going to have to pay their head coach, too, by the way.
Dundon lost all his money in the XFL.
Right, right.
League, not the XFL. What was that other league?
No, it was, or the AAF is what
you're saying. AAF, that's it.
Yep. We'll talk more about them because they got a lot going on. They've got, they're actually becoming a hot team in the Eichel trade market, it sounds like. They're going to be aggressive, I think, this offseason. I'm wondering even about them trading Aho. They would have to, it would have to be in a major deal, like getting Eichel. But from what I've read, they are pissed at him still for signing with Montreal. That they basically made him, they made Tom Dundon. Dundon, I think it sounds like, is not happy that Aho forced him to go get a bank loan to pay his contract up front. Because that's basically what happened, that he had to then go borrow money to pay Aho's contract. And I wonder if there's some tension there behind the
and
scenes.
And they're getting a mad discount on him, so.
Right, that's why, like, cap-wise, they actually did you a favor. That's why I've never understood that part of it. But anyways, you have Brind'Amour's contract, he's going to be a free agent coach. Hamilton, we'll get to Carolina because they're interesting at some point in the offseason. But that's going to do it for us today on the podcast. Thanks everybody for listening. It's been the Locked On NHL Podcast with Joe DiBiase and Mike DiStefano, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.